From the Roots Up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
Welcome to Taylor Report. Welcome to the Taylor Report. This is Phil Taylor, your host. It's CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. In the latter part of the show, and about maybe I'm going to say approximately 20 minutes, we'll be talking to Ted Schmidt, a very well-known, very respected peace activist, lifelong champion of oppressed people, and also a part of what is a great tradition called liberation theology. We'll be talking to him about these things. Of course, Ted is leading a weekly demonstration condemning the war on the people of Gaza, and we'll be asking him about all these things. And we're going to be talking also in a few minutes with Tony Leo of Unifor, and author of a very important book, on the history of the strike in Oshawa in 1937, which was one of the definitive moments in the auto worker and union history in North America. But to begin with, I want to make sure we touch on this really important, dangerous issue, and that is, of the current status of the frozen war, I guess you could call it. There's a momentary pause between the Islamic Republic, Israel, but more importantly, the United States. The U.S. has shown its hand early in this matter. I think we ought to call it the crowbar operation because there seems to be a notion that, for example, I'm seeing articles that say who won the 12-day war. This is not a 12-day war. It's a war that's going on at the moment. It is a war to remove the government of Iran. It is to extend U.S. Hegemony, to return U.S. to power in Iran. They talk about this, the program of enrichment of material that might, you know, be, well, produce nuclear energy. That is, that was initiated by the Shah of Iran at the time of the warmest possible embrace of the two. Jimmy Carter called the Shah a pillar of stability. There were U.S. Military bases, and he was an artificial monarch, which gave him a kind of special quality because he was, I guess you'd call him a nouveau monarch. They removed the democratically elected government of Iran way, way back, because it formed a parliamentary system, and they had a president who nationalized. He did the unspeakable. He nationalized the oil companies, particularly the British, were injured by this. So they went to work and overthrew him, and then they put in place a royal system. And that royal system then decided to have a program of nuclear development to provide cheap energy for the people, and also with a long-term view of the best interests of the society. At least that's what everybody said. And so it's forgotten. It's as though someone thinks that it was Ayatollah Khomeini that initiated the project. It was the Shah please remember, it was the Shah of Iran who initiated this with U.S. blessing. It was not a secret. But now they've turned it into an existential, silly play. Iran is has been under the Non-Proliferation Treaty Agreement. They have been inspected. They have permitted it. They have cooperated. But meanwhile, the U.S. and the government of Israel have kept up a perpetual drumbeat for decades, claiming that within hours they were going to develop a nuclear weapon. And it's led to people like Prime Minister Carney saying they must not be permitted to have a nuclear weapon. That is ridiculous on the face of it, because they don't have one. They are inspected and they belong to the Non-Proliferation Treaty Organization. And this, so we don't have, you have a non-crisis that's defined as a crisis, and which tells you that they're not interested in the, actually the nuclear part. They're interested in destroying this government, which refuses to go along with a U.S.-led definition of how the world should be run. And that is their great crime. And therefore, we have this current crisis. And I said, it brought up the word crowbar. If you've ever done any work with a crowbar, you know what you do. It is a device to crack and break down, provide leverage, destroy, and eventually flatten whatever you were working on. And this latest episode between Israel, the United States, and defensively, the Islamic Republic, is just the beginning, it's probably not the beginning, maybe it's a third of the way. They've done it before. If you missed it, you ought to go back and read how they brought down the government of Iraq. It didn't fall immediately. It went through a whole exercise of saying, we think he has a weapon, or we think he's going to have a weapon. And they did all this activity. And it was all propaganda work. And to put everybody on edge and always create the idea that something had to be done. And one of the things that was done was that Israel attacked and destroyed a French-constructed and guaranteed facility, which was to provide nuclear energy for Iraq. France was the witness to the fact that it wasn't for purposes of building a weapon. But that counted for nothing, because people who are in charge of the anxiety propaganda had to follow with this business of, well, we have to inspect, and he has to let us come and look, and we have to. All the way along, the targeted state has to be cooperative. Those who are doing the targeting, of course, have nuclear weapons. In the case of Israel, it is never discussed, and we don't know how many. I've seen speculation as high as 200 nuclear warheads, et cetera. And it is not discussed. Why? How could that be that they're not a member of the Non-Proliferation Treaty? And how could it be that no one discusses inspection of them? There has been proposals by Arab states and by others saying, if you want an actual peace agreement that would be secure, then you have to have a regional policy, and which would guarantee no nuclear weapons in the region by anyone, so that that threat, which leads, if there is one party that does have them, other parties have to consider how they will react. The only way to solve it is to, of course, have a region-wide policy of no nuclear weapons. But, of course, we're talking about a state that would never agree to it. because they have the backing of the U.S., who wants them to have these weapons. So it's very important that we recognize that what we're in a process where they intend to continue to find issues. In this case, the United States has directly bombed and flew in and flew out, dropping weapons that had not previously been used, so-called bunker busters. They did use a bunker buster, by the way, in Iraq at one point to kill a bunch of families of leading citizens of Iraq who were in a bunker underground. They were families. They weren't military people, but I remember they were amused that they had done that. They also, of course, did it to Hezbollah. But in this case, Iran, being a country of 90 million, a large country, a developed country, it was a little too big a job for Israel on its own to handle. And so the U.S. has come in. And the problem for everyone in resolving this is that all talks and all deals and all arrangements have to go through Washington. And that's where you lose when you begin, because if the U.S. is going to now mediate between Israel and Iran, it becomes absurd because, of course, the United States is a party, the principal party involved in the bombings. So it's not a pretty picture, and it is a crowbar job, as the same way they removed the government of Libya, they removed the government of Syria, not immediately, but they begin to whack and pull and smash until eventually it falls apart. They have a plan, and various people have talked about it, and you can find it. we'll talk about it in future parts of the show, not today, but in the future. We'll go into it in detail. But anyway, let's understand we should not be talking about who won the 12-day war. You know, it's been 12 ugly days, and it will be followed by many ugly days. But the goal is nothing to do with the nuclear capacity of the Islamic Republic. It has everything to do with returning a Shah-like figure to power in Iran.